Ladies and gentlemen, a week's gone by, a lot's gone on, which means it's time to tune in and listen to the ramblings of a diehard sports fan with Eli Gray.
Sports fans, thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Ramblings of a Diehard Sports Fans with Eli and Izzy. To join in, call 347-637-2306. Once again, 347-637-2306. Izzy, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I like this new 6-7 time. It's pretty awesome. People are probably in the car on the way home. Maybe some people are at home eating dinner. And they want to sit back and enjoy the ramblings of a diehard sports fan. So tell me, what issue is grinding your gears? I had to channel my inner Peter Griffin there.
So, like everyone knows, and I mean, we're all pretty much tired of talking about it already, but it's still half of the headlines that you see about Major League Baseball is just steroids-based. You're a Yankees fan, A-Rod, that's all he's doing. Let's get your take first. What, as a Yankees fan, are you thinking right now about A-Rod?
As a Yankees fan, I get to be straight with you. I'm looking at this more as a broader topic, sort of as a baseball fan. Alex Rodriguez, as a person, he's a horrible human being. Because the guy thinks that he's bigger and better than everybody else and that he basically can control exactly what is going on. When clearly it is obvious as night and day that the guy is not even that he's guilty. It's that he continues to portray himself as this innocent victim of the media and that he's a victim. That's not the case. I mean, look, the man is officially the highest paid ball player in the history of obviously baseball, possibly all professional sports. I mean, he has the largest contract, and yet he acts like I'm sorry to use the word, like a douchebag. It's just that's how he's treating the fans, like as if he's treating the people that have respected him, that have looked up to him, like idiots and fools. Now, you're 100% right. All that's coming out of baseball is just steroids. It's this. It's roids, roids, roids. Everything is. We're not looking at, like, the Dodgers, who are absolutely playing out of their minds. You know, over the last, I believe, 50 or 51 games, they got, like, 42 wins. It's amazing, and yet we're still focused on this Alex Rodriguez garbage. It's annoying. It's really annoying. I frankly, as a Yankee fan, I wouldn't mind seeing him on the – I don't care to see his bat in there. I don't care. I don't. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about this guy and him injecting himself in the gluteus maximus with HGH or the old crud that McGuire and Canseco used to use, the androdiastine. I remember back in those days. I'm fed up with it. I'm fed up with Alex Rodriguez and his attitude, and I'm just fed up with this steroid garbage. I really am. We got to move past it already. Let's just move on.
So here's the thing, and that's the thing, is baseball is perpetuating this steroids thing because all you see is players in the headlines at all times that they're caught, we're suspending them, we found them, we didn't find them, he tested dirty, he didn't test dirty. It's constantly the headlines. No one, you know, the average baseball fan doesn't pay attention to baseball as much anymore as they do the steroids and who was tainted and what they did exactly and how guilty are they? Did we find them? What do they have on them? And that's all that it is. And, you know, fans as a whole are perpetuating this. And, you know, it's time that everyone moves away from it. Every other sport, even though I guarantee you there is a problem, football has a steroid problem to a degree. Players are suspended from it. But you cannot name me the players that are suspended from it, except the rare occasion that it's a high-profile one. And even that stays in the headlines for a day or two max. Football, basketball, the other sports, hockey, they all either have a program in place to test for it, and if somebody gets suspended, it's a quick press release. Player X has been suspended for X games. That's it. Move on. Let's focus on the players, the play on the field, and the quality of the sport. Baseball, all they're doing is fighting these demons of steroids, and it is helping no one except the players that are taking it, because if you look at it, there is no incentive for players not to take steroids. You get suspended for X number of games, but if those steroids could help you out or to the degree to make you a little bit better to get that bigger contract or to propel you from the minors to a higher level in the minors and then hopefully to the majors, what incentive is there for a player not to do it? Ryan Braun, heck, he's making millions per year, so he gets a 50-game suspension or, you know, 100-game suspension. These players like that get that kind of suspension and move on, and next year they're playing. Ryan Braun looks great after this. He took his suspension. The Brewers aren't doing that great this year. He's had somewhat of an injury. He gets to rest the rest of the year. He'll be right back playing for the Brewers, and fans will love him, and they'll move on, and all that'll be is the headlines, and there's no incentive really for the players not to take it. And here's also the crazy thing. We're acting like steroids was all that made baseball players better in the 90s and early 2000s, and clearly we're looking out on the fact it was a piece of the equation. Ballparks got smaller, pitching tailed down a little, the contact. Players were hitting for contact. They were hitting for power. That's what they're doing now. The reason home runs have gone down now is not so much that steroids have been, you know, been tested for and gone down. It's just a fact. And if you look at all the, you know, major, all the websites have, Peter Gammons has on his site, a bunch of different sites, Hardball Talk had the graphs of why players and why the home runs have gone down in the past years, and they list exactly why. It's that players are hitting for contact less. It's not that steroids have left the game. It's that the contact, the pitching is getting better. Players are hitting for power more and getting less contact on ball. So by nature, the home runs will have gone down. The years, and here's from Joe Sheehan, great writer, says the years 1995 through 98 and 2008-2011 are indistinguishable from each other in terms of home runs on contact. So, you know, and if you're interested, you can go look at the Sports Illustrated, has the graphs and all that broken down exactly where he gets that from. But, and we're, you know, not focusing on the fact that it's not so much that steroids testing is doing it. It's the fact that contact is being made less on balls. And if baseball was smart, they would just move away from this, stop releasing, making a big story every time you catch a player, make that secondary to the game like the other sports like football did. Von Miller right now for the Denver Broncos is being suspended. But other than that, what players do you know that are in the headlines for HGH or steroids in the NFL? And trust you and me, there is an, you know, there are players in the NFL taking HGH. There are players taking steroids. But if they're caught with it, and granted the testing policy is not as much, but the reason the testing policy is not as strong in the NFL is because the NFL never made it an issue. They never made a witch hunt looking for these type of players like baseball did in 2000. You know, in the late 90s and early 2000s when the home run records were being shattered, they also didn't take into account that ballparks got smaller. So, yes, you're going to have more home runs. So it's a lot that you're doing. And also, here's the thing. Everyone knows that the concept of greenies, I'm sure you know what greenies are, were always being taken in baseball locker rooms. So there was always quote-unquote cheating of the steroids going on. And there was a great story. I mean, there are definitely Hall of Famers that are in the Hall who have great baseball careers that took steroids, and we overlooked that because they didn't get caught, and the reason they didn't get caught is simply baseball wasn't focusing on that. You had players in Ken Burns' documentary, The 10th Inning, there were Thomas Boswell says that he saw a Hall of Fame player taking what he calls a Jose Canseco milkshake, and his wife backed it up, even though that's third-hand info. But, you know, we're overlooking so much by this steroid witch hunt. Heck, most baseball fans couldn't tell you about the pennant races going on right now, the pitchers who are doing great, the young rookie, you know, pitching you have in like Matt Harvey and Jose Fernandez and the like. Instead, all we're focusing on is steroids. And here, and to take that even one step ahead, it's not even steroids that we're focusing on. We're focusing on the big names, the ones that grind our axes for some reason, like A-Rod, and baseball is making a witch hunt specifically against him. There were 14 to 15 other players, 20 plus on the Biogenesis list, 13 that got suspended for 50 plus games. And guess what? The average fan couldn't name anyone else on it except for A-Rod. Go. Name me a few players on that list aside for A-Rod that got suspended. I bet you can't.
Everett Cabrera, Francisco Cervelli, Nelson Cruz, Jordani Valdespin. I mean, again, you're talking to somebody.
Let me hear your name. The Houston Astros player that was suspended for it, or a free agent that was suspended, a Seattle Mariner. My point, you know, New York fans can name the New York players, and Cervelli now you can name because he was in the like you said, A-Rod douchebaggery of supposedly quoting names. You know, Cervelli being said, you know, A-Rod giving him up. But the point is we focus on certain players to do it, and we don't focus on others. Heck, Bartolo Colon, who made the All-Star game, was on that Biogenesis list. Why aren't we going after him like we're going after A-Rod?
Well, for a plethora of reasons. First and foremost, that you made, that is 100% accurate. And you said that there is no for ball players to not cheat. 50 games, 100 games. Look at Ryan Braun. Like you said, he's collecting $133 million after the fact. You only really, in a career, you're only really going to get one solid contract, maybe a secondary contract later on. So why not take the risk? It doesn't make sense for them not to. I completely agree with that point. But as far as the Alex Rodriguez witch hunt, I think it's pretty obvious why they're specifically going after Alex Rodriguez. Number one, the most important thing is that this guy's been thoroughly denying it. He's been blowing it out of his rear ever since the beginning, and every single one of these Biogenesis people, or these 20 or so players, they took their suspensions and ate it, and they shut their mouths, and that was it. They apologized. The worst thing that I heard was Everett Cabrera, the guy at the Padres, who made a statement, something to the effect of that he was injured, he took it to feel better, something of that nature. But he ate it, he shut his mouth, they all shut their mouths, and they went about their business. Now, granted, New York media, the New York Yankees, we're talking about the premier baseball franchise in all of baseball. We're talking about arguably the most premier franchise of sports that there is. But Alex Rodriguez continues to just to pull this crap and that crap and this lawyer and opens his mouth and talks crap. And guess what? The Yankees are as guilty with Randy Levine and Brian Cashman opening their mouths about Twitter and so on and so forth. So, yes, they are just as guilty as Alex Rodriguez. They're both guilty. It's the fact that he is so adamantly denying it and acting as if he is greater and holier than thou, and he is, excuse my French, well, I'm not going to drop that bomb, but he's sort of, it's as if he's bigger than the game, and he's not bigger than the game. And it's stomach-churning, as you said, because we're focused on this steroid crap when there are so many, well, I wouldn't say so many, but there are a lot of awesome baseball stories that we just aren't focusing on. Your Marlins, Jose Fernandez, and other than Marlins fans and a couple of real hardcore baseball fans, they couldn't tell you who Jose Fernandez was.
And
Matt Harvey?
That the scariest part about Jose Fernandez, I mean, if you watch the guy pitch, it's just dominant. He gets better as the game goes on. Most pitchers, the second and third time through a lineup, you know, they start tailing off a little, their velocity goes down, the counts that players run against him. But Fernandez gets better as the count goes on. And, you know, he's legitimately in the topic for Rookie of the Year for sure, Pitcher of the Year for sure. You know, it's a shame almost that the Marlins are going to shut him down pretty soon due to the innings limit that they have him on, which, you know, long term makes sense. But for right now, it's a shame that it's going to happen. But Jose Fernandez, since May 28th, 7-2, a 1.64 ERA. That's the lowest in all of baseball. 105 strikeouts, 93 innings. You know, he's averaging almost one strikeout per inning. You know, they had him with Puig, facing off against Puig the other night. He dominated the Angels. And the kid is pitching lights out baseball. And why isn't the focus? I mean, you're having great pitchers in general. Fernandez, Clayton Kershaw might be the first Dodgers pitcher to end the season with a minus 2 ERA since the great Sandy Koufax did it. But like we said, no one's focusing on it. Heck, and I want to talk about this for a minute. There's some great races going on towards the end of the season that'll finish us off, and no one's focusing on it because we're just in the steroids topic. So on that note, let's shift away from steroids a little. And the races that you have coming up, right now, Atlanta is classically in the lead, you know, for the AL East, but you have some teams behind them. You know, it doesn't look like the Nats will be able to make a push, but St. Louis right now is in the lead for the wild card. Right behind them is Cincinnati. I mean, you have the Diamondbacks to make a push for something. The NL is going to have some interesting races. The AL is for sure wide open with the AL East. You know, the Yankees are a long stretch, but they're not out of it just yet. You've got the Athletics who can make a push for the wild card, only being a game and a half back. Cleveland's within striking distance. Baltimore, I mean, and no one's focusing on that. So that's the shame of the whole steroids thing. It's not even that the players did it and were caught and were cheating, because let's be honest, there was a lot of players doing it. It wasn't just the batters, it was the hitters, it was the pitchers as well. So let's move on. It's really time that baseball shut up about the whole damn thing and move on from it. We get it. You tried cleaning the game up. It did a job, whether it was good or not. Just move on from it. Stop it. Stop making it the headlines. You're cleaning it up, quote unquote, but it's enough. Just get away from it. Move on.
Good point. Yeah, they should definitely clean it up, and they should just move the hell on. I agree. I will say this. You mentioned something about your boy Jose Fernandez, the guy down there playing for the Marlins. He's got the effect, the Justin Verlander effect. He gets better as the game goes on. I was lucky. I was able to watch that Dodger game. I was able to watch a couple other of his games after you had spoken about him. Obviously, I'd heard about him, but, you know, he plays for Miami. So I decided to check him out, and the guy definitely has that Verlander effect. He gets better as the game goes on, and assume Loria doesn't screw you guys and trades him for something like a box of baseballs, you guys should definitely see a lot out of him, you know, in the years to come. But let's face it, once the guy becomes like solid contract eligible and he maintains health, you know exactly the big market teams are going to try to grab him. So enjoy him while you can.
Well, that is true, and you know, it's the optimist in me that says that, you know, he's still got a few years at least until he's arbitration eligible, so he's still got a few years on the Marlins team. You know, there's no way they're trading him until he's at least a year out from arbitration eligibility, which we still have a few years, because the kid's a rookie. I mean, he barely even pitched in the minors, and he's just dominating, and so you're going to see him a few years, and the optimist in me says Jeffrey Loria will pony up and sign him on a long-term deal. It looks like Loria, the way they're talking, is that this young crew of the Marlins team right now is the rank that could get extended long-term. But let's talk about, I mean, heck, we're in the middle of August, almost September, and I can't believe I'm even saying this, but the Pittsburgh Pirates are in the lead in the NL Central. Did you ever think that you would see a day where that was actually the case?
In my lifetime, I believe that the last time the Pirates were relevant, I was, 8 years old. So we're talking, 93. So, no, I did not expect them to be where they are. I sure as hell did not expect the pitching to be what it is. I mean, Francisco Liriano, A.J. Burnett, Grilly, the guy, Journeyman, had 30 saves. I mean, now he's injured. He's on the bend. They got Melanson, who, by the way, was a Yankee, came up through the farm system, pitched for the Yanks, pitched for the Sox, pitched for the Astros, and he was garbage. He was terrible. Guy was an all-star this year. So they came out of nowhere. I love this kid, Pedro Alvarez. The guy reminds me, he's like a combo. Reminds me of like a Prince Fielder. He's just this big, wide dude that just when he hits it, he does not get cheated. He crushes the ball. They really exceeded the expectations of every single analyst out there. Forget fan. Don't tell me there's an analyst out there that predicted this. I don't want to hear Peter Gammons. I don't want to hear this guy. There's no way anyone on the planet predicted this. The question obviously comes down to the playoffs. They're young or they don't have the experience. How will they play in the playoffs? They're a feel-good story. They are. And I would say that it's arguable. Them and the Dodgers are the two stories in the NL. I mean, let's talk about the Dodgers, dude. Since Puig has come in, do you know what their numbers are?
It's crazy.
It's ridiculous.
It's beyond ridiculous.
Sick.
You know,
it's not even. It's one, but we're talking about one player. Baseball's a game of nine players. We're not even talking like, it's not like on a basketball court where it's five people and one guy can take over the game. Puig cannot take over the game, but his overall, I'm not going to use the word aura. I mean, aura doesn't, you know, perform on the field, but have you seen anything like that in the last 50 years?
No, but also let's not forget that the Dodgers did have they had talent there. It's not like they just, you know, it wasn't gelling, but it, you know, Puig is, I'm not minimizing at all what Puig did, but it's not like anyone is shocked that the Dodgers are in first place. They're shocked that they're in first place based on the start that they had to the year, but going into the year you had people saying that, you know, they were legitimately had a shot at winning that division.
Well, yeah, that division has always been a toss-up, and there's no question as far as talent. You're right. Of course, with Adrian Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez, I mean, they have the talent. That's not, you know, that's not in question. But and after the start of the year that they had to where they are now, it's night and day. And obviously, you can't attribute everything to Yasiel Puig. Clayton Kershaw has been absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you obviously seen some of his games this year, but this guy, I believe, I think it's after 50 or 100, I think it's the statistics are after 100 starts in a career, I believe he holds the lowest ERA in baseball history, something in the range of a 2.6, which was better than Whitey Ford and Sandy Koufax. Now, when you're on a list with those two, you know you're doing something right. The Dodgers.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he might be the last, the next, you know, the first player since Sandy Koufax to finish for the Dodgers with the under 2 ERA, and the Dodgers have had some great pitching over the years, so that's pretty mind-boggling in and of itself.
It's amazing. It's sick to watch him. A friend of mine sent me a message. I think it was a couple of games ago that Kershaw was pitching against the Devil Rays, and I think to describe him, he said godly. He said, watching this guy is like, it's literally, watching him is like no, like watching no other pitcher in baseball today. It really isn't. I mean, his stuff is always on. It's not like, it's like he has a bad game. This guy's ridiculous. His stuff, I'm getting a little tongue twisted because it's a beauty to watch amazing baseball. And this is what we should be discussing. This is what people should be discussing that watch the game and not the stuff that we had discussed earlier on. And I truly do hope the Dodgers get that World Series. I really hope they get there, and I really hope that they win it, assuming my New York Yankees don't get there. And at this point, even though they've been hot lately, it doesn't really look like they're going to get in. Not to say that they don't have a shot. They're only five games out. They've been playing hot lately. But there are a lot of feel-good stories out of the AL, and the odds are not in their favor. Where do you predict the Yankees will end up at the end of the year? Do you think they get in?
I don't think so. I mean, there's just so much crap swirling around that team that definitely has to be on, you know, has to detract a little from the players and what, you know, the race and everything. Even if the Yankees start getting in the race, do you think anyone's going to talk about that? No, they're going to continue to talk about the steroids. I just think Baltimore is in a better spot to make that push. The Red Sox are in a better spot. You've got Cleveland. I mean, the Yankees are definitely not. I don't see them winning the East. I can see them maybe making a push for the wild card, but I just think the other teams that are poised to make a run for the wild card are in a better spot than the Yankees are. With that, we're going to, you know, a lot more to talk about. We got to touch on football, a little bit of basketball. We'll take a quick commercial break in a second. Just want to let you know that we are now hosted by NDB Media. You can check them out, ndbmedia.net. Or like them on Facebook, facebook.com/NDB Media. Twitter, NDB Media as well. We have, if you're logged into Blog Talk Radio, you can log in. We have a chat that's going on during the show that you can chat with us. You can catch me on Twitter at Ellie Gray. We'll just use that too. Skype to call in. So there's a lot of opportunities to call in. And best of all, commercial opportunities. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, drop us a line and we definitely have spots open. With that being said, we'll take a quick commercial break and be right back to talk some football.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-shirt launching there.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Mike, what is your deal,
oh,
man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby!
Whoa.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
Hey!
That hurts.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
They come from the earth. Dirty. Ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving farmers.
This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
Alrighty, we are back. Thanks for tuning in. Once again, to get in on the discussion, you can call in 347-637-2306. 347-637-2306. Football well into the preseason already. We've got the third week of preseason coming up when a lot of the teams will play their starters for a good half to three quarters, then rest the starters obviously the last week, and right around the corner, opening weekend of the NFL, but the Dolphins, my Dolphins, took a brutal injury this week with Dustin Keller going down in the game against the Houston Texans. Swearinger made the tackle on him and went kind of low to the knees, and I don't think it was a dirty play, but it was a brutal hit. And as we all know, Swearinger said, you know, these new rules are what forced him to do it. And I think he kind of has a point, you know, where you know, you sacrifice the other parts of the body by focusing on taking away the injury limits to the head. What you know, and it's a shame because Keller signed a 1-year deal, was going to be a good threat, passing threat tight end for the Dolphins, and now, you know, he's taken away from the Dolphins.
It's sad. It's actually sad. I saw that that low light. Can't even call it a highlight. It was just it was brutal. It was a brutal injury. I cringed. You saw his knee bend in, a la your Miami Hurricanes, Willis McGahee, some other injuries in the past where you see the guy's knee bending like that. It's just, it's brutal to watch. But yeah, you touched on it. As far as the hits to the head, it's all from this concussion thing that's obviously been a staple in football, with ex-players suing the league because of the damage that they took to their head. And frankly, the reason that they contoured the rules this way is simply because of that. Because they figure, listen, a guy tears up his knee, I'll sacrifice two or three, maybe four knees for a terrible head injury, for a serious concussion, or in 20 years, a class action lawsuit by these former players saying, hey, the NFL did not see it in our best interest. They thought about their own interests and allowed guys to lower their helmets and blast the guy in the face. And I got to tell you, the NFL is turning into the no-fun league. I mean, from an injury standpoint, it's one thing, but I'm sure you heard about this. But there was a rule change in the offseason where on a touchdown celebration, if you spin the ball in the end zone, that's a 15-yard penalty for taunting.
It's so stupid.
Are you kidding me?
It's retarded. It really is. People need to lighten up, and I'm going to use one of my favorite quotes of all time by, I believe it was Alonzo Highsmith, of the Miami Hurricanes in the years that everyone was peeing their pants when they had to play the Hurricanes and they were just running up to score on people. If you don't want to see me celebrate, don't let me score. Don't let me get
Jesse
the big
Armstead,
play.
Jesse Armstead, baby.
You,
was it him
Jesse
or was it
Armstead,
Mike Irvin?
That's who it was. You're right. And you know what? It's the best quote of all time, and it's one of the reasons I said also I never had a problem, like a lot of people did, with the Bill Belichick running up the score in football. You don't want me to score? Don't let me score. If you let me score, I can do whatever the hell I want, because you should have stopped me. Stop whining about it and do something about it. Now, there is the balance of what Tony Dungy said is winners, you know, winners say a little, losers should say less. You know, there has to be a balance, but sometimes you just got to let these guys play. They made a big play. You celebrate. That's what we're paying these players to entertain us. That is all they are doing. And part of that entertainment is the celebration. Steve Rushen had a great article that I highly recommend a few weeks back in Sports Illustrated, where he pointed out the hypocrisy that all us sports fans have in where we don't want to see players celebrate. We want them to take it in stride and be professional. Yet, in every aspect of our lives, we prance around and celebrate everything. We're media whores ourselves, but we just don't have the spotlight that these players do. Every time we do something, we post an update to Facebook, we tweet it out, we tell all our friends. So it's hypocritical of us and a double standard to expect any different from the athlete. And there was Major Wright, I don't know if you read his article about Johnny Manziel. It was actually in this past week's ESPN, but it came out on ESPN.com a little while ago. He basically, and he was on Dan Le Batard's show, and he had a great quote. They were talking about Manziel getting out of control and being a QB getting out of control. And Major Wright made the statement that you don't think Johnny Unitas and those players were doing the same things back then? These type of quarterbacks, the high-profile quarterbacks, were doing, Joe Namath for sure was. He said the only difference between back then of a Namath to Manziel, he said the difference is not them, it's us. We're the ones putting them in the spotlight, constantly looking at what they're doing on social media. We are the ones who created these scenarios. So you know what? Part of it we should just take. If you don't want to see celebrations, don't give them a reason to celebrate.
Right. It's stupidity. I completely agree with what Major Wright said. I mean, yeah, it is social media. It comes down to it. There is social media these days, and we scrutinize every single thing. I mean, they were taking video, it was sent to TMZ, of Johnny Manziel at a Texas frat party getting kicked out, walking out with people throwing beer at him. Who gives a crap about him going to a Texas party? Like, do we really care? Do we really need to know? We want to see what the guy's doing on the field. He's living it up. He's enjoying it. Remember, he's a 20-year-old guy. I mean, come on. What else do you want at 20? And one thing I want to touch on that just the hypocrisy is just it's a joke. The NCAA with players not being able to somewhat profit off their fame. And let me explain what I mean. Now, granted, the rules are an NCAA player cannot profit off of signings and things of that nature and showing up to certain events. I understand that because it's in the rules. It's currently there. But something's got to be done with that. It's disgusting. Like, who's to say that a guy like Manziel will ever have an NFL career where that will pan out when clearly Texas A&M and the NCAA is financially gaining so much at his expense? They're gaining immensely. I mean, he carried college football last year, and yet they're going to make a big deal about the guy collecting $7.5 grand for signing some books or signing some bowls or something? Come on. There has to be something.
Yeah, it's got to change. Now, I don't think they can go to pay for play because then, you know, how do you average what each player should be getting? You know, they are getting scholarships, and, you know, for a long time, I was a big... No, let me finish. I was saying for a long time there should be pay for play, you know, and I hear the argument against pay for play, but there should be a stipend of some sort. It should not just be tuition. There should be a stipend of some sort because these players are making money for the colleges, even if you're not a big time star because you're part of that roster and you're busting your butt for them. But there absolutely, definitively should be no reason whatsoever that a player should not make money off of the jersey sales that his number sold, off of the autographs that he's able to give. That should absolutely be done. And you know what? If you're a backup player that can't get money for your autograph, well, then tough luck. That's on you. But if a player like Johnny Manziel can make money off his autographs, there's no reason that he shouldn't. If Javonis Clowney should, you know, and it's frustrating because there's nothing for them to do except take it from the NCAA. I honestly believe if the NCAA doesn't get into shape soon, there's going to be conferences that bails out and just does it on their own. The SEC is strong enough to do it on their own. Just knock out of the NCAA, get rid of them, go about it on your own. But, you know, the thing we also forget is that a lot of the NCAA, their funding is not just the football that we see or the basketball that we see. It's all the sports programs, so that has to be taken into account, too, when all this discussion is going on, because we just focus on the football aspect of it, the basketball aspect of it, but there, you know, you are having it for amongst the sports program as a whole, but the rules need to change in the NCAA. Hopefully this Johnny Manziel thing does change it, because his family has money to sue, and they could very well sue and challenge the validity of these laws, and that's what this case could be different than all the others.
It's ridiculous. It pisses me off, the hypocrisy. And now that we're on the topic of hypocrisy, I'm sure you've seen the hit that Jonathan Bostic laid on the Charger receiver. I forgot the guy's name. He's probably going to be bagging groceries in 2 weeks. But John Bostic, the rookie, came in on the Bears. It was a clean hit, laid the guy out, perfectly legal. The referees did not even throw a flag because they said it was a legitimate hit, okay? The NFL.com website, for a few days after this hit, it was their top play. So the NFL.com website is showing this play as their number one play of the week. What happens? The No Fun League decides to come out and say, hey, we're going to give this guy a $21,000 fine. Mind you, the guy's making $925 a preseason game. They're going to give him a $21,000 fine for a legal hit that the referees, who, as we know, so often will throw the flag, will throw it on the cheapest of contact, but not a single one of these referees thought that his play was illegal and wasn't clean. It was a clean hit. Have you seen the play?
Yes, and you know what else is funny? Like you mentioned, the hypocrisy. As football fans, we're watching it to see those hits and to take that away and then to scream about it afterwards. And you know what? Even in spite of all the injuries, the head injuries that players have had, I've had players who said they would have second-guessed it. I've heard players that I have yet to see one player come out and adamantly say, if I knew what I knew now, I would not have played football. They've all come out, you know, and beat around the bush a little, and I would have had, you know, more of a concern and this or that. But at the end of the day, these players know what they're getting themselves into. It's a risk. If you tell yourself otherwise, you're fooling yourself. That's what you're getting paid to do, even though some of these players aren't getting paid the millions that people think they are. But still, these players are living a dream. They're living a dream that 90% of, you know, sports fan, 95% of sports fans would trade in a heartbeat to do. So the hypocrisy of, you know, the hits and the this and the that, you know, at some point you got to realize you're playing a very physical, very aggressive sport. There are going to be big hits. There are going to be injuries. There's going to be consequences to what you do, and that has to be a part of it, and it has to be balanced to some degree, but at some point you have to cut that off, and I don't think the NFL is doing a very good job with that.
They're not doing a good job of it. It's getting to a point where I believe the comment was made by Herman Edwards. I could be misquoting him, but I heard something to the effect of at some point they may just start playing flag football, because you're eliminating every possible zone on a player to hit. And yes, like you said, we are watching the game to see these big hits. I don't want to see a guy get dragged down by his ankles from behind. I don't care to see that. I want to see a guy cut through the line, blast straight away, and get leveled by a safety. That is what I am paying money for. That is the reason I came to the game. I want to see that. That's why. That's kind of what makes the game what it is that aggression, is that power, the speed. That's what you want to see. If you want to watch flag football, you know, go to the park. Go watch a bunch of, you know, a bunch of 20-something-year-old former has-been whatevers run on the field and you know, and run around like clowns if that's what you want to watch. But when you turn on the TV at 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon or 4:15, whenever, you want to see big hits, you want to see scores, you want to see defensive prowess. That is the reason that the NFL is the premier sport in America, and it continues to grow. And if the NFL knows what's good for them, they will stop banning these idiotic celebrations and stop making fines for every little idiotic thing that's done on the field. It's idiotic at this point.
Yeah, and you know what? The sad part is that the NFL is striving for quote unquote perfection, even though, and it's stunning to me that they think they can get it, because nothing in life is perfect. We, you know, there is no such thing as perfect, except maybe in baseball, the perfect game. But other than that, nothing is perfect. And the NFL needs to realize with everything, there is a balance. You cannot have perfection. You cannot have a sport that's as physical as football is without the big hits and the physicality of it and finding players. And everything is a trade-off. And, you know, some of the ways that they're making the trade-offs and the areas they're making the trade-offs are absolutely not correct. You tell me you don't want to see a celebration from a player after you get a big touchdown? Hell, I know what I've done, sitting in the crowd celebrating with everyone, slapping guys on the hands who you never met before in your life. It's just, as fans, we do it. Why can't the players do it themselves? It's hypocritical, as we've mentioned many times, beyond belief, and that, you know, hopefully it changes, but I don't believe so. And how much of the preseason have you watched? Because I've watched some, you know, a significant amount of the Dolphins. You know, I tend to turn it off, you know, come in the middle of the third quarter when all the scrubs are in and it gets boring. But to me, it seems like the refs are not that good this year. They're taking a lot of time, unless they're just working out the kinks. But they're being, you know, deliberately picking up a lot of flags, taking time to conference to get it right. And it seems almost like we're back to where it's the scrub refs, and I hope that that's not the way it's going. Obviously, it's the same refs that we've always had, but it looks like it's getting worse. And to me, I hope when the regular season comes around, all that crap goes away and it's a flowing game and not the way it is. And transitioning from that, did you see Amon Bradshaw went back? You know, he's now with the Colts. He's one of the most, Forbes came out with the underpaid players. But, you know, he came back to the Giants, to MetLife. And did you see what the Giants did for him when he came back this week?
That's the thing. I actually did not see what they did for him. I did, however, see him and Tom Coughlin embrace prior to the game. He did not play in the game. He was in sweats on the sideline. What did they do for him?
They made, and this is something very classy that you will not see the other New York team do, and class and the Jets, I would never put in the same sentence, but class and the Giants, absolutely. They made a video tribute that they showed on the big screen for Ahmad Bradshaw, who, like we know, had a great career with the Giants and was cut, but now with the Colts. But they had a video tribute, and Bradshaw said he was blown away by it. It was surprising to him, and it was awesome. So props, big high five to the Giants. Classy move to do that for a player that is now playing for the Colts. And let's go back to the Jets, the J-E-S-T-S, Jets, because that's all they do seemingly lately. They can't even get their QB situation correctly. Rex Ryan coming out and saying Geno Smith had one of the god-awful practices that he ever saw and not backing Sanchez. I mean, it's just a mess there. But now the best story of it all from Rex Ryan, who just doesn't learn. The guy is just stupid and doesn't learn. If it were anyone else, they would have been, axed already for this. He comes out and says, let's see if you can guess. What was Rex Ryan's latest prediction?
His latest prediction I haven't really heard, and I got to be honest. I the only time that I ever hear anything or tune into anything Jets related is if it shows up on ESPN or on Fox One. In the papers, I don't even read an article on the Jets because it's just everything is stupid. Everything's idiotic. Well, what did the brilliant, the unbelievably talented and well-spoken Rex Ryan omit this time?
Well,
please,
he can't go as crazy as to predict the Super Bowl this time because I guess, that lesson he learned. But Rex Ryan, sexy Rexy, Jets will have a top five defense this year. let that sink in, my friend.
Oh, God. By the way, that's not a fake laugh. That is a legit laugh. I am so excited. I love it when he does this. Do you know why I love it when he does this? Because the New York Jets and the New York Giants are polar opposites when it comes to franchises. And most, and I got to tell you, a good 90 to 95% of my friends are Jet fans. I have very few Giant fans. And when Rex Ryan opens his mouth, it just gives me more fuel to rip at them. And being in New York and with the New York media and all, he does it to himself. A top five defense? Has he even looked at his defense? Who is playing for them? The only two players on their defense that are nameable or Antonio Cromartie, because he continues to pop out children and pay copious amounts of child support.
That he can't name.
And he can't even name, right? Or a Muhammad Wilkerson. That's it. And Muhammad Wilkerson is even taking it too far, because the guy that doesn't know anything New York football probably doesn't even know that. So it's Antonio Cromartie. It's Geno Smith, obviously. I just used Geno Smith and offense in the same sentence.
Well, Geno Smith might be a defensive player because he'll keep the defense off the field with the other team just returning his picks, for multiple touchdowns.
True story. Yeah, they're horrible, man. They are the quintessential train wreck. They are an embarrassment.
It's true that last year they did finish eighth in total defense, but that didn't translate into points allowed, because for points allowed they ended 20th. So you could have a total defense, a top five team in total defense, but if you're not keeping the scoring down, who gives a crap? And that's where the delusion of the Jets comes in. And you know what? They can't even get their QB situation correct, straightened out. And we all know that if you don't have a quarterback, you do not go anywhere in this league. But, the incredible part, the NFL, the beauty of the NFL is that, and Greg Cody made this statement, and I think it's, completely right. He said the NFL each year, though, going into the season, you'll have five great teams, five sucky teams, and 22 of them. The other 22, that could be anywhere from 7-9 to 9-7, depending on the bounce of the ball. And there is no other league that has the parity like that, and that's the beauty of football. And to further prove that that statement by Cody was correct, in the last 4 years, four different teams have won the NFC East, three different teams have won the NFC North and West, as well as the AFC North and West. So aside from the five solid great teams going into the season, the Giants would be in that for a few years at a point now that NFC has a lot more parity at the top, but you have the Patriots, the Steelers, those top teams. But other than that, the amount of teams, the parity that exists, the bounces of the ball, and I mean the Dolphins had that last year where they finished 7-9, but a few plays go different at the end of the game, you're a 9-7 team, and that could be said for a lot of the teams in the NFL. That's the beauty of it, but hate to break it to you Jets fans, and I'm hating on you right now because I do hate the Jets with a passion. You're going to be a part of that five sucky team group.
I. You're pouring salt on the wound. You're driving the stake deeper into those poor Jet fans. It's enough that they don't have a running game. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have any. What do they have? Can you tell me what it is that they have? What do the New York Jets have that is watchable? Give me one player on the Jets that you want to see on the field. Tell me, please.
Tim Tebow. Oh, wait, no. Whoops, sorry. That was last year's story.
Timmy Tebow, yeah.
Tim Tebow.
Don't worry. Dude, I guarantee this, and mark my words, a la Doug Flutie, you will see if Tebow does not get cut and he ends up on that roster, he doesn't somehow, he makes it as a third stringer, he will do a pooch kick, probably against the Jets later on in the season, assuming that the Patriots have wrapped up the AFC East. You will definitely see some kind of tomfoolery or trickery from one Tim Tebow. That will be the highlight of his season. To all New York Jet fans, I will make a bold – actually, it's not bold at all. It's pretty much – it should be accurate. The Jets at best will at best be 4-12, maybe 5-11 if God is good to them. But they are a train wreck. They have no quarterback, as you pointed out. They have no running game. They have absolutely nobody on offense that can catch the ball. They don't have anything. What? Jeff Cumberland. Who the hell
you
is
know
Jeff Cumberland?
You know your team is screwed up when the biggest headline of the season was, you lost your number one fan. Fireman Ed even gave up and said, screw this.
Poor Fireman Ed, poor bastard.
He was the one New York fan who knew how to spell the four-letter word Jets. You know, like, after that, it's above three letters. New York Jets fans are way out of whack trying to spell their team. You're going to hear J-W.
No, dude, no. They can spell their team. It's just spelled C-R-A-P. I don't know, J-E-T-S. What the hell's that? The Jets.
Oh, yes.
What an embarrassment. Yeah, what a sad group.
It's and I'm going to take pleasure, I think. Hopefully scheduling will work out. The Dolphins, every year, there's a Dolphins fan club in New York that has a ton of people. They buy out a section in the Meadowlands. If you go look at the videos online, it's great because you can visibly see them on TV. You can hear them. And I intend to fly up to New York to go to the game with the Dolphins fan club. And that's going to be so much fun going into MetLife Stadium, watching the Dolphins play the Jets, beat them in the Meadowlands, in MetLife, and hear all the Jets fans whining about it. And you know what? That's going to be a great feeling. Beating the Jets is always a good feeling, no matter who you are. And I think the Dolphins are going to go 2-0 versus them this year. And, they're just bad. They're rebuilding. They're a few years away from possibly being contending again. I mean, unless Geno Smith, a major, major surprise, and plays to the way the Jets hope he plays, you're still a quarterback away. They didn't go out and draft a real quarterback. You're hoping on Geno Smith. You got to go out and get a quarterback, and once you get a real quarterback, they take some lumps. You saw last year even, Tannehill struggled a little, and, that takes time to do. So the Jets are a few years out from contending, and they're just a mess overall in general, and they really need to start cleaning it up, rebuilding overall in general. And, I just can't wait for the regular season to kick off, to start, play some real football. Oh, my God, it's been way too long.
It's been way too damn long. waiting for football, waiting every single week for your game. There's nothing like it. And finally, when it happens, and it's an awesome game, you're excited. And when your team loses, you feel like crap for a couple of days. At least Jet fans out there know that every one of those 16 games in the middle of the week, they're going to be crying and moaning at how their team played like garbage. And by the way, when you said rebuilding, I want to make one very simple statement. If the Jets ever want to rebuild the Jets as a team, the first thing that they need to do is take Rex Ryan. They need to bring in a guy like Dempsey and have him kick his rear end as a field goal through the uprights and the hell out of New York. Because Rex Ryan has been detrimental at best to the team with his mouth, with his stupidity, with his crap. They got to get rid of him. And until they do not get rid of him, they will not be successful. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree, because not only is he running his mouth and making it, you know, that atmosphere resonates throughout the rest of the team. So you have the other players who are running their mouth and not being able to back it up, and you're just giving fodder to the other team. You know what? He's just been a disaster as far as what he says in public, and I highly doubt he makes it out of this year. He'll probably go with the safe move of starting Mark Sanchez. Sanchez will play like crap. He'll be forced to go with Geno Smith, and that no one knows how that'll go. And I can see butt fumble Sanchez and Rexy Ryan out of the Jets by the end of the year. You know, it would be interesting to see if they fire Sexy Rexy in the middle of the year, if they do as bad as everyone expects them to. And you know what? They need to get themselves a real coach, a guy who's not going to sit there. You know what? Dolphins hire made a small-time hire, you know, compared to some of the names in Joe Philbin last year. And the great thing about Philbin, and some fans don't like it, is he brings a demeanor of he's not hot and he's not cold. He's just calm, cool, and collected no matter what's going on. Those are the kind of coaches that succeed. It's not like the Tony Sperano's out there who are field goal fist pumping each time their team scores. You got to be level-headed, maintain calm and collected. You know, Bill Belichick does the same thing. You do not see an emotional change from Belichick. The successful coach, Tom Coughlin, the successful coaches are the ones that have a calm demeanor. They don't get ruffled up about something either good or bad. And you know what? Tell me a coach, a Super Bowl coach that has won in the past 10 years, you know, aside from maybe Chucky, that has that kind of demeanor that is in your face, and I just don't think that is there. What you need to be and have is a successful coach and a top coach in the NFL is the calm, collected demeanor of a Bill Belichick.
Well, that definitely makes sense, and you bring up a very good point when you talk about Chucky. Chucky, well, why do you think he's been an analyst on ESPN for the last 5-6 years? Because he can't get a coaching gig.
Yeah, and that is definitely, you know, the Jets need to get rid of Rex Ryan to even begin to start to think that they can turn it around. As long as you have them, he's more of a detriment to that team than any help he can be. You know what Rex Ryan is perfect for? A defensive coordinator. He is not a head coach. He needs to be a defensive coordinator on a team that does not make their coordinators available week to week. You go in, he's a great defensive coach. I will not take that away from him, but he should not be in the public's eyes. It's cute for the media, and it's cute for the fans and the opposing fans that's going to rag on, but at the end of the day, that does not make winning football. Winning football teams do not have coaches like that. And with that, we're going to wrap up. We've got about a minute left. Thank you all for tuning in. We shall be back probably next week, same time slot, day to be determined. Izzy, any final thoughts with a minute left on this show to take us into the week?
Yes, there is one thing I would like to say, and this is to everybody listening. I implore you, and I am confident that Eli agrees, do not focus, do not read any more about this steroid garbage. Focus on the beautiful stories that are the Dodgers and the Pirates and the rest of the beauty that is Major League Baseball. Focus on the game, not on the politics surrounding the game. On that note, I will pass it back to Eli. Thank you very much for having me on. It was a great show, and looking forward to next week.
Yes, sir, and I agree with Izzy. Perfect way to end this. Let's stop the steroid talk. Let's go and move towards what the NBA and NFL have done, where even if a player is caught, it's not a story. It's a headline at the bottom of the page. It's a press release, nothing more. Focus on baseball. Focus on the great games that are being played, the playoff races. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week. Talk to you later. Bye.
Peace.